Hello. I'm a bit stuck behind here because I have managed to do a bit of an elaborate presentation, which is in no way reflected by the boring visual display. It is a little bit noisy in places, so I apologise in advance. So today I want to talk about sound, time and space and rhythm analysis of prison life. This is based on a research project I undertook in HMP Midtown, which is a small local men's prison. I was there for about 7 months. I used oral ethnography, which is ethnography that preferences sound, and I complemented that with ethnographically informed interview. But I spoke to most people moving through that space. I was there a lot. I was effectively known as the sound lady. People would stop me for all manner of stuff. So all manner of people were walking through that space, from prisoners to drug counsellors, etc., I spoke to. And my aim was to explore the significance of sound in prison society. When I talk about sound, I mean it in a broader sense, an intrinsically subjective notion. The concept of the auditory imagination helps with that because it illustrates the extent to which sound marries the internal life with that of social external worlds. So imagination and experience are allied. It's quite a guttural response at times to something beneath language, as T.S. Eliot talks about when he talks about poetry. And that's better illustrated again, I guess, when we ask what noise is and how incredibly subjective that is. You might enjoy listening to Grime at top volume at 9 o'clock. At 3 a.m. it becomes a problem. It would also be fundamentally inappropriate in a place of worship. So we can see that sound and our response to it is not only incredibly subjective and personal, but is also contextually specific and reliant on the time in which it's heard. We can ask what a cafe is, sounds like, or a library, or indeed a prison. And those sounds will provide us with cues, helpful social cues, to determine the kind of behaviour that is required of us. And in so doing, we are manufacturing that place through social activity. So, as Sheehan talks about, sound really straddles phenomenology and constructivism. And this is kind of usefully illustrated by this We Sound clip.
Research and that about being in our prisons. Tell me what's happening in this prison right now.
I can't.
Why not? Research and that about being in our prisons. Tell me.
So there he's telling me, several things. Firstly, that I don't know what's going on, but also that sound is not only something that's being heard, but actually is shaping the prison day. There are certain activities and behaviours that are anticipated because of those sounds, and they are interpreted and have particular meaning within that prison space. Sheehan also talks about the way in which sound operates as a system of signification. This is usefully, again, exemplified by thinking about banging in prison, which of course has an elaborated language of meaning. So I have an example for that here as well. I don't know if you can hear this.
And then six, like, fixated on it.
And of course that particular banging, that rhythmic and rapid banging, indicates frustration. Let me out, I've got stuff to do. Perhaps the regime's running behind, or the person in question has got some urgent business to attend to. Perhaps they think they should be let out and the staff do not agree, in which case that might go on for the whole of association, which is particularly distracting when you're in one wing and you can't get away from it. Rhythmic slow banging, however, has an altogether different meaning. Now, if other people join in around the prison, that is experienced as incredibly threatening by staff. The idea being to just illustrate that the prison is only ever ordered and controlled with the tacit agreement and consent of the prisoners. They are letting the staff know that they are outnumbered in no uncertain terms. If you hear a rhythmic banging varying in quality, that's more like someone smashing up. And that normally will denote somewhere on the spectrum between despair and distress. Someone is taking their upset out on their surroundings, or flat packing, as it's known certainly in the Midlands, which is when they destroy their furniture and post it out through the ops hatch. If it happens near canteen day, it may mean that they're desperate to get to Seg because they know that they're not going to have enough stuff coming in to pay off their debt and they're anxious to avoid a beating. A rarer example, unfortunately, is a rapid banging changing location around the prison, like a Mexican wave. That, certainly in a local prison, tends to mean that the local team are doing very well, they may have scored, and everybody is briefly united in a rather jolly time. Unless, of course, you are sound sensitive or suffering from PTSD, in which case you might not enjoy it quite so much. So I've kind of used Lefebvre's rhythm analysis here. He's not the first person to mention rhythm analysis either, but it's fundamentally multidisciplinary, which very much echoes my approach to things, although I'm kind of a criminologist. And it refers to both the focus and method. So he identifies sound as a means of exploring those relationships between activity, people and space. Lou puts this in a far more accessible way when he says, being a veteran only makes me able to relate sounds to the pattern of life. So what might this do for how we understand carceral spaces? Don, an officer, talks about the prison soundscape as being an everyday tune that's normal for there. Everyone will interpret that different, but you've got to learn the tune that establishment's playing, and anything that's out of sync, any shouts or screams or rumblings, you pick up on that, and you'll subconsciously do it as well. There'll be staff that have worked in a particular place for 10, 15 years, and they won't consciously learn the noise of the place, but if anything's out of sync, they'll know. And Don here is arguably referring to an arrhythmia of prison life, when those competing rhythms are in dissonance, the regime is being opposed by either sounds or expressions of anger, etc., that are interrupting the flow. In contrast to that, what he describes as the tune's playing, it's the perfect tune, everything's great, which he follows up with a bit of prison officer scepticism. Why? That's a polyrhythmic day, when the regime is running fine, and there's sufficient latitude for prisoners to express a bit of positive disobedience, either dawdling around where they should be going back to their cell, taking that moment of commonality out at dinner time, and so forth. So if we consider things in that way, sound has a role to play in how power is conveyed and order maintained within the institution. Erwin and Owen talk about the enervating regime, and interestingly and quite unusually in this day and age, HMP Midtown has a bell, which I am going to play you. Now that bell is sounded many times a day and was unfortunately right by the spot I chose to stand in, it being by the door and maximum visibility to all the staff. I would physically recoil pretty much every time. It's quite loud. And of course, as Marlon noted, it makes you get used to things you shouldn't get used to. And that's quite interesting in terms of thinking about how the institution reaps its effects and renders its, well, reconstitutes its power. It's interesting to note that there's no place for sound in Foucault's Panopticon, but it was quite central to Bentham's idea. In addition to that, sound has a role to play in remaking the place, the penal environment, and imposing that sense of fear and subjugation on its residents. So, where Tommy says, you hear those sounds and you wonder what's out there, he's referring to quite an alien cacophony, and specifically in Tommy's case, he was talking about when you land, when you first land in a new institution and you're unfamiliar with the particular environment, the particular composition of that place, and you need to learn very quickly how to navigate yourself within it. Jolly day. So where Crewe et al. Talk about that consumptive wariness that is imposed on the inhabitants of prison spaces, sound has a very important role to play in conveying that to people and maintaining that feeling of fear and discomfort. In addition to that, Kevin said to me one day, I thought of you on a visit. My little un heard the bell and said it must be dinner time because he hears the bell at school. Daddy has to go and have his dinner now. And that just illustrates the way in which that carceral continuum is conveyed and maintained culturally, and those meanings that are shared across generations and across institutions. Toot talks about sound as the temporal sense. Sound allows us to transcend time, to move within it, to move between memory, experience, and expectation. And of course, that has particular pertinence for people inside who may be relying on their memory for comfort and connections with the outside. So Duane says, one thing I'm acutely aware of are normal outside noises. I love to hear them as it reminds me that life goes on outside these walls, which is a fairly positive remembrance. But for one gentleman I spoke to in Aylesbury, dreaming of keys, I thought I was back in here. But what was worse was when I was back in, I dreamed of the sounds of home, hearing my brothers and sisters running about, kitchen sounds, breakfast being made. But when I woke, I was bagged up. So for him, these experiences of time are operating in multiplicity, which disrupts that linear notion of how time is experienced within the prison sentence. So the sentence is experienced as out of time and step with the rhythms of the outside, which nevertheless permeate those porous borders, resulting in some cases, particularly in this individual, I'd say, in what you could term a kind of ontological arrhythmia. So if we refer back to the auditory imagination, there are particular cultural resonances with the soundscape being banged up in the clink. As Jay says, wherever I am, I hear keys and I'm back inside. So there are connections between that sound and that enduring trauma, which is revisited. Or as a staff member said, oh good, can you tell us why we hear cell bells wherever we go? So that sort of the dirty work involved in being in that closed institution also permeates the boundaries of the prison walls. Submersion has an oral quality too, however. So within HMP Midtown, the vulnerable prisoners and the care and segregation unit are all in the bowels of the prison, which is kind of like a ship. So when you're in those particular spaces, there's an additional fuggy sound of like the weight of the various layers of the landings bearing down upon you. And of course, many of those prisoners do, well, they all do, in fact, walk around other areas of the prison. So people talk a lot about depth, but I'd say it does also have a more literal, experiential dimension to it. So why does this matter? Well, I'd argue that sound has the potential to disrupt our assumptions about how we learn and how we go about learning. That idea that the gold standard of observation is what we should all be striving for kind of misses huge chunks of our human experience. And thinking about the prison as an acoustic community, I would argue, adds to our texture of representations of carceral experience. But in addition, and very importantly, I would argue, expands our field of inquiry behind the door. A lot of prison sociology, quite understandably, tends to rest on observation and experience of those communal spaces that we have ready access to. But of course, the vast majority of prison life is experienced behind that door. And it's much more difficult to get at. And I even spent a night at HMP Midtown, but going and sharing a cup of coffee with the fellas was something that I was a little bit loath to do. Not because I had any problem with that, I really could have done with a coffee most of the time, but I knew it would be frowned upon. So they were kind of largely inaccessible. So I would argue then that we need to move from more conventional notions of space and time to ones which incorporate sound into that relationship. And in so doing, we complicate and add nuance to our understanding of those complex relationships between our activity, our expectation, space, time, etc. And I'd also argue, actually, that in better considering this long-neglected aspect of human experience, we can go a great way to better charting what it is to be in prison.